Emily, are you ready?
I am ready. Can you hear me?
Perfect. Yes.
It's such an honor to be asked to talk to people about something that is so important to me. I am finishing, well, I'm in my first year of pharmacy school and hoping to finish that up in spring. And I am a non-traditional student. I'm older. I'm 40 and I have an 18-year-old son. And I have come about where I'm at through a very circuitous path. And one thing that has never changed is my love for science. And nothing, I guess nothing could keep me out of science. When I was a high school student, I loved it and was told that it was hard and that it was not easy to make accessible on top of being hard. And I dropped out of my second year of chemistry in high school. And it was really hard for me, but it was because the accommodations just were not what they needed to be. The fact is, a lot of people don't know what to do with blind people who want to study STEM. So needless to say, I got one bachelor's degree that consisted of cobbling together classes that I could get through without running out of Braille or without, you know, failing those classes because I couldn't access an online textbook or, you know, it was just all the same things that you guys know about. But eventually I just decided that I was tired of settling and I went back to school at Wichita State as a chemistry and biology student. And it actually took filing a federal complaint with the Department of Education for me to finish my biology major with a chemistry minor, but I don't regret it. And things are so much better now at Wichita State than they ever were. And that school continues to make strides and be accountable to their disabled students, which I have to put in a plug for them because they are really going above and beyond what a lot of schools do, which is when they are made to accommodate someone outside of their comfort zone, they do it. And then the door closes again and the next student has to have the same fight. But that's not true at Wichita State anymore. And I'm hoping that's not going to be true at KU by the time I get through, because I am the first totally blind person that I have found who is going through a doctor of pharmacy program, which is a 4-year program. And it is access intensive in a lot of ways. I have to fight really hard to get my biochemistry and things like that put into Braille and tactile graphics and have it done on time so that I can participate in my classes at the same rate as my peers. But there's nowhere else I'd rather be. I have always loved chemistry and I've always loved drugs. That sounds a lot worse than it is. I've always loved physiology. And for a long time, I thought I was a good fit for medicine. But the more I learned about what it is like to be a doctor, the more I figured out that I needed to do something that was different and that my personality would have to change in ways that I wasn't comfortable with. And I was tired of changing myself by that point because I spent most of my young adult life changing myself to fit into other people's comfort zones. And I think when us women get into our 30s, we've just had enough of that. So I'm one of those women. And so when I decided I wanted to go to pharmacy school and I applied for the program at KU, it was interesting. I went in, I submitted all my documentation. I had really good recommendations, a good transcript, and I actually sat for the pharmacy college admissions test, which is a standardized exam that no blind student had ever taken. So I had to really advocate to have a Braille exam. It wasn't perfect. Their test is on the computer and I had to have a person typing my written essay for me. And I don't have the same fluidity of thought when I'm trying to dictate something or thoughts to someone that I do if I'm typing or brailing it myself. So I did struggle. It was a very exhausting exam, but I scored well. I scored in the 83rd percentile. So most pharmacy schools want somewhere in the 60s, like in the 65th percentile or whatever to admit you. So my score was very good. Everything else I submitted was very acceptable, but the school denied my admission. Not only did they deny it, but they actually wrote me a letter stating that they could not, or they had spoken with their disability office and I could not fulfill their technical requirements as a blind person without the sense of sight, even though I spoke to them at great length about how a blind student utilizes a sighted assistant. That assistant is not an interpreter, as in they don't interpret information. They don't tell you what to think or how to interpret things. They are simply conveying very specific information, and they're a tool. It's like learning to use a reader, learning to, you know, explain to someone exactly what you need so that you can then take that information and make decisions or make, you know, confirmations of what you think is going on. So the school was not okay with me proposing to use a sighted assistant in the lab, though I had done that in microbiology and chemistry in my undergrad with quite a lot of success. So I sent the letter to the NFB. I sent it to the national office, and they knew me from my struggles at Wichita State. And they looked at the letter, and I heard from Scott Labar in Colorado, and he said, we will help you to deal with this. So Scott Labar and I, and Tom Page, who is my affiliate president here in Kansas, we asked for a meeting with the school, with the pharmacy school and the admissions committee. And we were granted that meeting, which is pretty interesting because normally if you don't get admitted to a program, there's not a lot of recourse, I don't think. But the way that they crafted my denial letter, they actually listed the things that I could not do. And here's what they were. Number one, I could not check prescriptions for errors. Number two, I could draw up the dose or administer a vaccine. Number three, I could not participate in the mixing of drugs, which pharmacists have to do. It's called compounding, where you fill IV bags with like saline and then you add certain amounts of drugs to it. And you can also make like capsules and creams. There's all these things that we do. So these are the things that they said I couldn't do. So those were technical standards in their program that they said I couldn't meet. Now, interestingly, these are the same people who said to me, can you explain to us how you do things as a blind person? And I said, well, how is it that on the one hand, you're telling me what I can't do, and then you're asking me to explain my capabilities? You cannot have it both ways. This is not logical. So that is when they started to learn kind of who I am as a person and as an advocate for myself, because it just got worse from there for them, because we had a meeting with Scott Labar and with Tom Page and I and people from the admissions committee. And we talked about this and we said, first of all, legally, you cannot do this. You cannot explain directly to someone how their disability is why they're not being admitted to a program. Second of all, here are the ways. And then we proceeded to talk about blind people who are successful in chemistry and medicine and all kinds of other careers. And needless to say, it took one meeting and then I was admitted to the program. So interestingly, in my first year, I passed all of the milestones that they said I could not complete, except I have not yet compounded drugs, but I've checked prescriptions, I've dosed vaccines, and I've given vaccines both in the lab and in the clinic now. And I passed all those. Those you cannot move on in pharmacy school until you have passed them, and I passed them on my first try. So I have no idea where they get this idea that I could not do these things, that they then wanted me to teach them how to modify for a blind person. So this this logical disconnect just continues to show up. And the great news is that I'm working with pharmacists now more than I'm working with administrators. I mean, I just still work with some with administrators, and the administrators on my campus, which is a small campus, are awesome. They are so supportive and have supported me through everything. But I think the people who work with me on a daily basis, who are pharmacists and instructors, have really just opened themselves up to learn. And they have stopped making any kind of prognosis of what can or can't be done. And it's always, hey, Emily, here's three different syringes. Which one do you think you want to use in the lab? Which one can, you know, works the best for you? Or one of my preceptor, who's also my academic advisor, she also teaches me in the lab and she teaches compounding. And she has already told me, Emily, everybody else is going to sit here for a half hour every day that we have lab and watch someone do these procedures before they go and try it themselves. And I'm not going to make you sit there. We're going to go into the lab one-on-one and I'm going to show you. And that way, when your peers are working, you will be doing the same things. So I think I've made some kind of inroads into a field that is very, they're very set in their ways about disability. I was listening to a little bit of Gary Wunder talking about some things in the Braille Monitor, and he was talking about blind people's experiences in medicine as recipients of like medical treatment. And it makes me think about how much we are seen as a pathology and how now I'm actually on the other side of the counter, or will be soon. And I want to change that. And I want, like I tell my classmates all the time, you're going to deal with a lot of blind people who need their prescriptions. They're going to be older and have, you know, macular degeneration and other things. And they're going to need you to help them and do the little things, like don't hand them a touchscreen, or don't, you know, stand there and stare at them instead of saying, may I help you? And there are all these things that they have an opportunity to learn. Now, whether they take that, I don't know, because everybody in their first year is overwhelmed. So I try not to be too hard on them, but at the same time, we can't change the medical field from the outside. It's going to take more of us trying to get in and working around our colleagues and calling out the fact that we are seen as a pathology. As small children, if we are born blind, or if we are born deaf, or if we are born with even like something that's fairly fixable, like a cleft palate, it's always sympathy. That's what we get. We get sympathy from the medical community, or we get pity, or we get, you know, all these negative things, when really they're kind of setting the tone for how a parent is going to think about their children. So I don't know, this has been such an interesting thing for me, not only from an access point of view, but just thinking about how we work with disabled patients. And I think that is going to be the greatest privilege for me, is to not only to be trusted by patients, but to earn the trust of my colleagues, to teach them what is appropriate and how it is that we can work on making the world work for everyone. And instead of pointing out how we don't fit in the world. So I don't really know what you guys want me to talk about. So I hope that wasn't too random. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Oh, thank you so much, Emily. So this is Bonnie, and I do have a question. When I talked with you several weeks ago, I believe you said to me that you were going to be giving shots or doing immunization. Immunizations. Is that what you told me?
Yes.
I want to know how that went. We all want to know how that went.
So we have something in Wichita that pharmacy students do. It's called Operation Immunization. And we had pharmacy students at three different sites. I think it was three in Wichita. And we had an allotment of flu vaccine, and we took anyone who came in who wanted a flu shot, and it was free. And I had given vaccines in the lab, but it was saline. It wasn't an actual vaccine, but I had to do all of the things that you do to administer a vaccine. I had to draw it up. I had to swab the area. I had to locate the appropriate part of the muscle, you know, to put the shot in. And I had to ask the patient, you know, are you sick today? How do you react to vaccines? So I had done all that in the lab, and that was great. But man, it was different when I went in to the flu shot clinic, and my preceptor was there, and she is so awesome. Like, she is one of these people that is willing to stand back and let me struggle and let me learn, which I love, because a lot of people are very on edge, especially around blind people in science, or where there's physical things that need to be done. I mean, the first thing I did at this shot clinic was put needles on the vaccines, because the vaccine itself actually comes prepackaged. It's in a little syringe that you keep cool. And I had to put needles on them. And granted, they're a covered needle, but it takes some fine motor skills. And there have been people that I have been around who were hypervigilant even about something like that. You know, what if you drop things? What if you, because God knows people with eyesight never make any mistakes, right? They never drop anything. They never do. So, but my preceptor is so hands-off. So I was really nervous. And like the first shot that I gave, everything went great. I swabbed the guy's arm. I asked him, you know, how do you react to shots? Are you sick today? And all the things. And he was really supportive. And I put the shot in. And what you do is you put the needle in, and then you just push the plunger. But it's kind of scary, because when you put a needle into somebody's muscle to give them a shot, it feels like a really slow process. It feels like time just kind of stops, right? So I put the needle in and I started to push the plunger. And I was like thinking about how I had just gotten my flu shot at a different pharmacy and the lady had put it in really slowly. So I was like, okay, this is how I'm going to do this. Just like my person that gave me the shot. So I'm sitting there and I'm slowly pushing the plunger down and finally got the shot in, took the needle out, put the cap on the needle. That's the other thing. When you pull a needle out, your first job is to cover the needle because you don't want to have an accidental needle stick. And a lot of people who are sighted are very vigilant because, again, you have a very sharp object that has been in somebody's body, so it could be a biohazard, right? And yes, I was wearing gloves, but that's nothing compared against a needle. I mean, anybody could get a needle stick. So I was hoping that I wouldn't be nervous about that part because I thought, well, I'm going to do something stupid and stab myself. But my preceptor was so chill. And when I took the needle out, I just pushed this little button on the syringe and the needle gets like covered by this plastic sheath when you do that. And it went great. And I was like, oh, this is going awesome. I'm doing well. And my preceptor said, well, she said, you did really great, but you do not ever have to go slow. When you put the needle in, you push the shot in and get out. So get in and get out. And she was so good about correcting me without making me uncomfortable or trying to make me uncomfortable during the actual administration of the shot, which is not the time to correct unless you really have to do something. Like if I was doing something really stupid, I think that would have been good. But she was so tactful about teaching me. So the next few shots I gave, they went, you know, a lot faster and I felt much more confident. And I will say, I know one person knew that I was blind, but I'm not sure anyone else did because my cane was in the corner. We were all masked and I was wearing glasses because I always do because it's so bright. So that might have given it away. But one of the guys that I injected, I'm pretty sure he knew that I was blind. And he just gave me some really supportive comments that I thought was really nice. And I actually gave a shot to one of the pharmacists there, which was really cool. I figure if she's willing to do it, I must be doing something right, you know, because she hadn't had her flu shot that year. So it was a great experience. Giving shots is very easy. It does take some practice just because, like, when I go to put a needle into somebody's shoulder, the straighter you can put the needle in, the better, right? So it took me, like, I started to worry about it. And my preceptor's like, don't even worry about it. Just think about where you want the needle to go. And it worked. It would go in very straight. And it was also weird because you actually put the needle in all the way to what's called the hub, which is where the needle attaches to the syringe. I was like, man, I don't want to put it in that far, but it really is okay. Like there were just things that I had to get used to, but apparently sighted people have to get used to that too. Like sighted people have struggles when they learn to give shots. And so I think overall, I was pretty lucky. I mean, mine went great.
That's super. Did you hear from any of your fellow students about like things not going so well?
No, you know, I didn't. I know that when I was in the lab, a lot of the students struggled to stick each other, even though we were just using saline at the time.
Right.
Like my partner was so nice. And as much as people worried about how I was going to do this, she actually panicked when it was her turn to give a shot. And I say that in all, like, I am absolutely not critical of her, but it's interesting to me how people assumed that I was going to be the one that was struggling, right? I was heartless from the beginning. I could just stick people, right? It was a lot harder for her. And I explained to her that it was really okay. And that if she made a mistake, you know, it was a tiny needle and I wasn't gonna break or fall over dead or anything like that. And by the third shot that she gave me, she was much better. But it is hard for somebody to do that. Like, I understand that it can be a real challenge.
Any other questions? I have one more, but let's see if anybody else has a question. So my second question is, I know that I believe you talked about this in your discussion with the Indiana affiliate. When you are doing compounds, you have to do X number of drops. And as someone who tried a little bit of essential oil stuff, that was the one thing I was like, then how do I make sure it's one drop and not three or four or five? So just give us a quick how-to on drop measuring.
So we don't like to use drops in pharmacy. A drop is not in the international units of measurement.
Okie dokie.
So what we would do, though I will tell you, where I did learn to use a drop counter is in chemistry, where you do use drops to like add acid to a base, let's say. And I actually used Dr. Supalo's LabQuest for that. And you can set up a drop counter. You can like calibrate it to count drops for you. As far as what I'm going to be doing, I don't think I'm going to be doing a lot of drops. I'll be doing like milliliters and a lot of like weighing out powders and mixing them with milliliters of liquid. So there, I would employ a sighted assistant for sure. But see, even if you were to, like, using drops can be hard. I'd probably, I mean, if we have to do that, I would use the sighted assistant for that too, because sometimes when you're doing drops, you'll have like two drops come out. Do you know what I'm saying? Ah. Or you'll have like, but we don't, I think we're a little more specific than that.
Yeah, it has to be way more precise than.
So we, my instructor for that lab is so confident and okay that she has already told me, she's like, Emily, everything that we're going to do, you can either do by touch or I can be your eyes for the minimal parts that you need eyes for. Like, she is not messing around.
That's great.
Like, for example, oh, I'll get to your question in a second. I was talking about making, mixing liquid. Sometimes you'd have to mix like several different liquids together, or like a liquid and an oil and another liquid. And you have to mix them until they actually all come together into like a uniform, like a cream. And she's like, Emily, can you make gravy? I'm like, yeah, I can make gravy. And she's like, then you can make anything that's cream, like any of the creams that we make in the lab.
Make what?
Gravy.
Oh, gravy. Well, then, yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds a little bit like cooking. I love to cook, and I you know, make recipes with anywhere between 11 and 15 or 16 ingredients. And I...
Yes.
Yeah, and it's similar, only way more precise.
But you could do it, and she told
not
me.
Not pinches.
Or his.
No.
Dash.
No dashes.
Somebody had a question?
Kevin did. Go ahead, Kevin.
My question was, I know with Walmart and I think Walgreens, what is available now in regards of Scriptoc or something of that nature for prescription medication for labeling the blind?
So this is a very interesting question, because this brings up an issue, another one of these kind of social issues, because think about this. We are expected to be consumers of pharmacy, right? We are expected to use something like Scriptoc to figure out our own medications. What I'm getting ready to do is reach out to Envision America and say, look, I'm on the other end. I am doing the pharmacy. How can your Scriptoc support me on the back end of what I'm doing?
Walmart does do it here, Kevin.
Walmart does it. Walgreens.
Does Walgreens use Scriptoc now?
Some of them do, I think. It's actually something that I'm going to try to market more locally to my pharmacies that I know of, because it's not that expensive and it's really awesome.
I don't know.
What was that? I'm sorry.
What happens if you lose your Scriptoc machine?
You can use your phone now. That's what happens. You can, there's an app.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That will read.
Yeah. Go ahead. Okay. You need a microphone.
Okay.
You need a microphone.
How do blind people draw up something for giving a shot? I have to give my wife a shot occasionally. I'm still a bit I think I'm drawing up that liquid into the syringe.
What are you drawing up, if I may ask? Is it a liquid or an oil?
Liquid.
Okay. Here's what you're...
For one.
How much? What's the amount?
The liquid amount, I believe, is about 12.5 mils.
Wow.
No, maybe
that's...
It's very small.
1.25 or 0.125, maybe?
Say 1.25.
All right. Do you know what size syringe you have?
Pardon?
Do you know what size syringe you are using to do this? Like, what's the capacity of your syringe?
An insulin syringe.
So here's what I do. I get to know my syringe. So when I am in the lab, or when I was in the lab and we did this, my preceptor had the right idea. She brought me in ahead of the other students, and I took three syringes and I got to know them. I got to know which ones had the plunger that slid really easily and which ones had a plunger that had a little bit of a harder time moving. So first of all, I started out with the plunger that wasn't as movable, right? So it was a lot more stable. And then what I did is I figured out what the dosage was that I needed. And then my preceptor and I took the syringe and we pulled out the plunger to the appropriate dose, right? So we would pull it out. Like, what I found is for the shots that I was giving, the width of my index fingertip was the exact length of plunger that I needed to pull out, right? Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, to me.
So eventually, once I got to where I could very accurately pull that plunger out to that like appropriate volume, I started using a bottle of saline. And I took the bottle and I stuck the needle in the top and then I flipped the bottle over. And I always filled the syringe completely and then would slowly push out liquid until I came to the length of plunger that was like the width of my fingertip, right? Mm-hmm. And I not only did I get the dose right, but since I pulled out extra and pushed it back out, all of my air bubbles were usually gone too. I mean, I could have people check because we were in the lab and everybody else was getting air bubbles too. But I always relied on my own like methods first and then asked my preceptor, but she was going around correcting everybody's air bubbles. Like, I'm not kidding you. So anybody who tries to tell you that we are somehow worse in the lab is kidding themselves. Everybody is there because they don't know what they're doing. We are students. We are making mistakes that we will then not have to make in practice. So it is absolutely possible to measure out liquid.
So I like what you said. I know that when I was giving medicine to babies, I would always have someone, unless the syringe was the exact same size of the amount, mm-hmm. or about teaspoons, half teaspoon, that kind of thing, I would have someone take a knife and make a little nick on it. But
yes,
and that works too. And so when that nick gets right at the top, as you pull it out, then you know you've got the right amount. And I don't imagine in thick cough medicine or whatever, antibiotic, there's probably not so much air bubbles, right? Or
maybe- Oh, the thicker the better. Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
But even with the thicker one, if you pull out more than you need, especially if you're, yeah, you know, then you're more likely to deal with being able to push those bubbles out. Yeah. It is absolutely doable, though.
Totally. Yeah, I had, my husband was a regular working man, and so I was the one giving that medicine to those little folks when they needed to be medicated.
Gary?
Go ahead, Gary.
Emily, I was at the Kansas convention when you were first starting to have difficulty with the pharmacy school. Mm-hmm. And we were not sure how things were going to come out. And I just want to say how wonderful it is to be able to see that not only did you decide to fight and you decided to stand strong, but that you are prevailing, and hallelujah. I never would have considered such a thing when I was in school. And so thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, I wouldn't be here without the Federation. And I will tell you, we're still struggling. The school is not so much the pharmacy school. Those guys there are the best. I have never had such an amazing experience as I have had with the KU School of Pharmacy and my instructors and stuff. But we are struggling with materials still. Like, it is a difficult. And there are times when the materials aren't where they need to be when I need them. And it's not great, but we're making strides. I really want to make it like Wichita State, where things move better even after I leave. But I don't know how that's going to go yet. I'm just trying to survive my program. But it wouldn't be possible without the Federation. There's no way.
Super. All right, one last question. We're getting late. I'm not even checking time here, but yeah. Dorp, any more questions? Are we done? Yes, we do have a question.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't see the hand and I didn't hear the name.
This is Tierra. I was debating whether I wanted to comment about this or not. When you guys were talking about the syringes and how to measure up a accurate dose, that's something that I struggle with as well, because I have three kids. And I lost mm-hmm. my sight 5 years ago, and my kids are 8, 10, and 12 now. Uh-huh. And I was just thinking, if there isn't already, like somebody invented it or created it, there should be like a syringe that is magnetic at the part of the plunger that touches the liquid up inside the syringe, and then maybe like a magnetic ring around the syringe, and maybe a marked braille, like for so that way when you move the plunger, the ring around it moves with it, so you know exactly where your liquid is. Is there anything like that? Has anybody made anything like a syringe accessible to the blind?
There's not, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay. Because in medicine, you do not reuse most of the time now.
Ah, yes, yes.
And that is why.
For home use, and I was thinking, yeah.
But for home use or for like lab chemistry and stuff, I would be down with working on something like that. It'd be fun.
I think, I was just thinking one of those clicking kind. So you would every couple, every meter you click.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Click, click, click as you pull up on that.
Or
that
every goes quarter milliliter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's a good idea too.
Yeah. And there's always a need for patenting, man.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to now change topics and become syringe creators and go into the lab and with the, you know, those things that can print.
Make. 3D printer.
Yeah, see, yes. Yeah, okay. So thank you, Emily. Give her a hand.
Thank you very much for having me.
Continued luck to you.